Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 27.
So today we're jumping into a really interesting bit from Journey to the West, Chapter 27, actually.
Right, an early chapter.
Yeah, and we're looking specifically at an interaction between Tang Sunzang the Pilgrim and his, well, very powerful disciple, Sun Wukong.
It's a great snapshot. And what's interesting is how quickly you see these tensions bubble up.
They just left Zhen Yuanzi's place, right?
Yeah. And Tang Sunzang even got that grass return elixir. So he's feeling, you know, physically better.
But almost straight away, they hit this mountain. And the description is intense overlapping peaks, ravines, tigers, wolves.
Snakes, fog, dense woods.
Yeah.
It sounds pretty formidable. Ancient, wild.
Definitely. And Tang Sunzang is, well, you can tell he's apprehensive, but Sun Wukong, he just seems to know the way, totally confident.
That contrast is immediate, isn't it? You've got the scholar monk relying on faith, and then Wukong, who's much more self-reliant, used to navigating danger. It's bound to shape how they see the same landscape.
It really comes to a head, though, when Tang Sunzang gets hungry.
Ah, yes, the food situation.
He just sort of demands Sun Wukong find something to eat, almost like he forgets where they are.
And Wukong's response is so practical. No village ahead, no shop behind. Just stating the facts.
He knows the reality. Even with all his magic, he understands the physical limitations here.
Exactly. But Tang Sunzang, well, he doesn't seem to accept that reality quite so easily. His expectation seems to be that Wukong should just make food appear somehow.
Which then leads to that really sharp rebuke, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's quite harsh. He brings up Wukong's past imprisonment under the mountain, basically accuses him of slacking off after being rescued.
It's kind of ironic, you know. His own hunger and impatience are actually getting in the way of them reaching Thunderclap Monastery.
It really is. Mm-hmm. It suggests maybe a certain lack of perspective on his part. He seems very focused on his own immediate discomfort.
Forgetting the bigger picture, perhaps. And Wukong's defense is so mild.
It really is. Just, I have been quite diligent. He knows arguing probably won't help.
Especially with the threat of that that tight fillet thing, the magic headband.
Right. That's always hanging over him. So instead of arguing, he acts. He leaps up into the clouds to scout for food. Always resourceful.
A classic Wukong. And what does he see?
Well, pretty much what he expected. It's desolate. Just this lonely westward path. More trees than people by far. A tough landscape.
But then, a spot of red.
Yes, down to the south. He spots this patch of red and thinks, maybe ripe mountain peaches. Hope.
And Tang Sunzang's reaction to just the idea of peaches.
It shows how much his expectations have already lowered, I suppose. He calls peaches a great treat for a Buddhist monk. Suddenly, peaches sound wonderful.
A welcome relief, I guess. And he tells Wukong to go get them, quickly.
So Wukong grabs his bowl, uses his cloud somersault, and zooms off towards the south, towards those peaches.
Okay, scene change. We get inside the head of, let's say, a local who has some very specific, very bad intentions towards our travelers.
Ah, okay, so this isn't just random danger.
No, not at all. This demon and immediately knows who Tang Sunzang is, recognizes him as the reincarnation of Jin Chansi.
And Jin Chansi was significant.
Hugely significant. A being who cultivated himself over 10 lifetimes. And there's this legend, you know, powerful rumor in the demon world.
Let me guess. Something about eating him.
You got it. Eat just one piece of his flesh and you get immortality. Eternal life.
Wow. Okay, so Tang Sunzang is basically the ultimate prize walking through the mountains.
Exactly. The demon's thinking, Hashirskumuzo, he's really here. Today's the day. Pure excitement from the demon's point of view.
So immortality on the line. Why doesn't the demon just, you know, attack? Jump out from behind a rock?
Good question. Because there are guards. Pigsy and Sandy are standing right there.
Right, the other disciples. But are they really that much of a threat at this point?
Well, the text says they might not have great abilities right then. Oh, yeah, Pigsy was a celestial marshal, Sandy was a general.
Precisely. Their powerful presence hasn't totally faded. So the demon feels that lingering authority and, well, doesn't dare get too close. Not yet.
It's like facing down retired generals. Still intimidating?
Kind of, yeah. So a direct assault is off the table for now. The demon needs a different approach.
Subterfuge.
Deception. Pure illusion. The demon decides to transform. A quick shake. And suddenly, it's a beautiful young woman. And the description the book gives, it's incredible. It really paints a picture.
Oh, it does. The author pulls out all the stops. Clear brows, bright eyes, white teeth, red lips.
Sleeves like jade shoots, a skirt revealing tiny feet. I mean, it goes on and on. Ice-like skin, willow eyebrows, star-like eyes.
He's some Thethos. A moon-like face, pure nature, graceful body, voice like a singing bird. It's the absolute picture of innocent beauty.
And she's even got props. A blue pottery jar, a green porcelain bottle. All looks very domestic, very harmless.
It's a masterful setup. You have this dangerous setting, the demon's lethal intent, and then this vision of delicate beauty. It's classic misdirection.
Playing right into our assumptions. Beauty equals goodness, right?
Exactly. Exploiting that mental shortcut. And Tang Sunzai, he's definitely caught off guard.
Yeah, he's like, wait a minute. Wukong said this place was empty. But here's this young woman. He points out the contradiction.
But then there's Pigsy. Oh, Pigsy. The moment he lays eyes on her, all caution just evaporates. The text says, the idiot's mortal desires are stirred. He can't help himself.
And he doesn't see the danger at all?
Not a bit. He's clearly a demon, but he can't recognize it. His desire just completely blinds him.
So what does he do? Try to play it cool?
Well, he tries. Straightens his robe, puffs himself up, trying to look sophisticated.
Oh boy.
And then walks up and says, Sobobog, female bodhisattva, where are you going? What's that you're carrying?
Smooth, Pigsy. Real smooth. You can just picture him completely smitten, totally oblivious.
It's a perfect example of how, you know, strong desires can just short circuit our judgment. He sees what he wants to see.
And the demon must just lap this up.
Oh, absolutely. She launches into this perfectly crafted backstory. Says she lives nearby, White Tiger Ridge. Pious parents, always helping monks.
Hitting all the right notes.
Totally. Only child, got a husband, worries about her parents. And why is she out here? Just delivering some food. Fragrant rice, fried gluten.
Let me guess, for a monk.
Exactly. To fulfill a vow her parents made. It's all so virtuous, so believable. Filial piety, religious duty.
It's designed to disarm, isn't it? Tapping into those core values.
Precisely. Build trust by reflecting shared values. Classic manipulation.
And Pigsy, he buys it completely.
Hook, line, and sinker. He's thrilled. Runs back to the Tang monk all excited. Master, food! And he even complains about Sun Wukong being off eating peaches somewhere.
Huh. Blaming Wukong for goofing off while this kind boner has appeared.
Yeah. Town's bizarre. That monkey's off playing somewhere eating peaches. He's totally convinced she's legit. Mostly because he's thinking about his stomach.
Immediate gratification. That's Pigsy's weakness.
It makes him incredibly susceptible. Now, Tang Sanzang, he's a bit more cautious. Initially, anyway.
Okay, good.
He does scold Pigsy a bit. Says, you know, we haven't met anyone nice out here, let alone someone bringing food. But, even with the woman standing right there looking so innocent, he still doesn't recognize the danger. The narrator explicitly tells us again. She's each Shayashin Zakin. Clearly a demon, the elder didn't recognize it.
And he does the polite thing, asks her where she's from, what she's doing out here.
Pretty standard questions for meeting someone on the road, setting the scene.
And she spins his tail. Says her home's just west of the ridge. Her parents, oh, they're super devout Buddhists. Always happy to help monks.
Mm-hmm. Playing right into his values.
And she says she's their only kid, but she's worried sick about her parents getting old, you know?
So a very sympathetic story. Hits all the right notes. Filial piety, religious devotion.
But here's where it gets kind of interesting. Tang Sanzang, he doesn't just lap it up. He actually pushes back.
Oh, how so?
He quotes scripture at her, says, like, daughters shouldn't travel far from their parents. And he asks, why are you out here alone? No servants. Where's your husband?
Wow. Okay, so he's applying his strict code of conduct.
Yeah, he even tells her straight up, this isn't really proper womanly conduct. She's quick, really quick, totally. She says, oh, my husband, he's just over in the valley farming, got guests helping out. It's busy season.
Okay, plausible deniability.
And she's bringing them lunch. That's why she's out here. And alone, Tang Sanzang still hesitates. He's worried her husband might show up, see him eating the food, and get angry.
Oh dear, what if her husband gets upset that we took his lunch?
You're kidding. He's worried about social etiquette.
Pretty much. He's stuck in his conventional thinking, worried about causing trouble with the husband. Interesting. So the woman, does she give up?
No way. She doubles down, says her parents' kindness. Oh, that's just a minor thing. Yeah. And then she starts praising her husband, says he's this amazing philanthropist, you know, fixes bridges, helps the poor, cares for the elderly.
Building him up as this incredibly virtuous guy.
Exactly. And she tops it off by saying, honestly, my husband would be delighted if he knew I gave food to you. A holy monk. He'd love me even more for it.
Wow, that's quite the manipulation tactic, appealing to his piety and suggesting it would actually please the potentially angry husband.
But it doesn't work. Pang Sanzang still refuses, just won't eat the food.
He holds firm.
And PZ must be losing his mind by now.
Totally frustrated. He can't believe the monk is turning down food. He even mutters something sarcastic, like, oh, I suppose you only eat food made by that monkey.
He's just hungry.
Driven entirely by hunger. And finally, he just snaps. Impatience takes over. He lunges forward, tries to knock the jar over with his snout.
Then comes Sun Wukong.
Wukong sees her, drops the peaches.
Yeah, no hesitation. Staffs out. He knows.
He knows because he was one, right?
Yeah.
He understands the game, and he tries to warn Tang Sunzang straight up. He says, Master, this woman, not good. She's a demon here to trick you.
No beating around the bush.
No. It's a warning based on, you know, lived experience. He knows the playbook.
And he doesn't hold back describing his own past, does he? He gets pretty graphic.
Oh, yeah. He talks about being back in his cave, the Water Curtain Cave.
Right.
And saying, like, if he fancied some human flesh, which he apparently did.
Yikes.
He'd use illusions. Gold, fancy houses, pretending to be drunk, or, crucially, a beautiful woman.
And the detail about luring them in.
It's chilling. He says he'd lure the foolish ones back to his cave and then, well, steamed or boiled.
Okay, wow.
And even drying the leftovers for, you know, cloudy days. It's brutal.
But it serves a purpose in the story, right? Like he's saying, look, I know what this looks like. I've done it.
Exactly. It establishes his credentials, if you like. He's not just guessing.
Yeah.
He's laying out the grim reality of what they could be facing, hidden behind that kind face.
But Tang Sunzang, he hears none of it. He sees the food offering and immediately goes, oh, a female bodhisattva.
Yeah, such a kind heart, he says. He's genuinely shocked Wukong could even suggest otherwise.
How can you say she's a demon? Like, it just doesn't compute for him.
And that's Tang Sunzang, isn't it? Deeply compassionate, wants to see the good. But here, it's like a blind spot. He can't reconcile the outward appearance of kindness with, well, potential evil.
It makes sense for his character, but yeah. Dangerous here.
Definitely. There's this inherent trust in goodness that Wukong just doesn't share, or at least not when his eyes tell him otherwise.
And then Wukong gets sarcastic, right? Because the monk isn't listening.
Oh, yeah. He doubles down. He basically says, okay, master, I see. You're just charmed by her looks. So what? Should we build a hut here? You two get married. We'll just head home.
Super awkward. So talk is cheap. Wukong just acts. Takes out the staff.
And whack, hits the demon.
But she's clever. She pulls a fast one.
Right. This corpse liberation technique. It's like, poof, she sheds a fake body.
Like leaving behind an empty shell.
Exactly. So her real self escapes, totally unseen by the others. But what Tang Sunzang sees
is Wukong brutally murdering this apparently innocent woman who was just offering them food.
Understandably, he freaks out. He's terrified, trembling.
He accuses Wukong, right? Injuring innocent life, he shouts. He is absolutely convinced Wukong just committed a terrible crime.
And you can see why, from his perspective. He's relying on normal senses, his eyes. He sees a body. He doesn't have Wukong's special vision.
He sees the illusion, not the reality behind it.
Precisely. And his bias against Wukong's, let's say, direct methods doesn't help.
But Wukong doesn't give up yet. He tries again. Master, don't blame me, he pleads. Just look in the jar.
Yeah, come see what's really in here.
And instead of nice rice and gluten.
Ugh. Maggots. Frogs. Toads.
Gross. But definitive proof, you'd think.
Yeah, the physical evidence makes a dent. It has to. It backs up Wukong's warning. But that seed of doubt, that suspicion, it's already there. He's already leaning towards disbelief.
And then, oh boy. Enter Pigsy.
Right on cue, always sniffing out an opportunity.
To make things worse, usually.
Usually. He immediately sides with Tang Sunzang, of course, and he spins this whole story.
What does he say? That she was just a local farmer?
Yeah, just an innocent local. He says something like, Wukong was scared you'd recite the headband tightening mantra, so he faked the whole thing, the gross food, just a big magic trick to distract you so you wouldn't zap him.
Wow. That is some serious twisting of the facts.
Yeah.
Playing right into Teng San Zhang's worries about controlling Wukong.
Exactly. It makes Wukong look like the bad guy, protects Teng San Zhang from maybe admitting he was wrong, and shifts all the blame. It's quite cunning in a slimy way.
And the worst part is, Teng San Zhang buys it.
Hook, line, and sinker. The text literally says he indeed believed that idiot's instigation.
Oh, man. So he starts chanting the mantra.
Immediately. And Wukong is in agony. Headache, headache. He's crying out, stop, don't recite, just talk to me.
That's just awful. Wukong saw the truth, tried to protect them, and now he's the one being punished based on Pigsy's lies.
It's a real low point. You feel Wukong's pain, not just physical, but the betrayal. He tried to do the right thing.
And Teng San Zhang lays into him, doesn't he? Accuses him of being violent, lacking compassion.
Yeah, basically saying he's failed as a Buddhist disciple. Sweep the floor, fear-harming ants, that kind of thing. How can you be so violent, killing innocent people? What's the point of getting the scriptures if you act like this? Go back.
He actually banishes him, tells him to leave.
Yep, just like that. Go back.
That's incredibly harsh. He's choosing this surface-level idea of compassion over the actual deeper truth of the situation.
He's stuck on the appearance of violence against an innocent and completely misses the reality of Wukong stopping a dangerous demon. It shows at the limits of his perspective sometimes.
Wukong must be heartbroken. What does he even say?
He's devastated. He asks, you know, where would I even go back to? And then he reminds Teng San Zhang.
About the mountain.
Yeah, yeah, about being trapped under the Five Elements mountain for centuries after wrecking heaven.
Right, until Teng San Zhang freed him.
Exactly. Wukong reminds him, you saved me, master. Guan Yin gave me the precepts. If I don't go west with you, I'll look ungrateful, dishonorable. My name will be cursed forever.
Wow. That's a powerful plea. It shows how much the journey and his loyalty to Teng San Zhang actually means to him. It's not just a job.
Absolutely. It's about honor, gratitude, redemption.
Mm.
Despite all the arguments, there's a deep bond there. Or at least Wukong feels it deeply.
As Teng San Zhang soften.
He does, eventually. His compassionate side wins out, maybe hearing the desperation in Wukong's voice.
Okay, so he takes him back.
Yes, but it's not exactly a warm welcome back. It's very conditional.
Like, okay, fine, but...
Exactly. He gives this stern warning, don't you ever do anything like this again, and the threat level increases.
How so?
He says, next time, it won't just be one round of the mantra, it'll be 20 rounds.
Oof. 20. That's serious.
It is. So Wukong, probably desperate, promises he won't hit anyone again. And then, kind of sadly, he offers the monk the peaches he originally brought back.
Trying to smooth things over.
Yeah. It's a fragile truce, really. The trust is clearly damaged, even if they're moving forward together again. That threat hangs over Wukong now.
Right after the demon has been, well, walloped by Wukong's staff.
Uh-huh.
You'd think that would be the end of it, right?
You would, but what's fascinating immediately is that the demon doesn't just, like, cease to exist.
Oh.
The text specifically says its spirit escapes. And this is the crucial first step in the elaborate deception that unfolds. It highlights a key element you see in a lot of these tales. Evil often doesn't just disappear. It adapts. It reappears in new forms.
And this demon, sort of taking a breather in the spirit realm, is clearly not one to just admit defeat.
Not at all.
We get a sense of its internal calculations, a kind of grudging respect for Wukong's power, maybe?
Sure, there's that. But also a firm resolve to keep the charade going. It's thinking, okay, that stung, but I'm not done yet. Let's try a different angle.
This internal resilience is pretty noteworthy.
It is. It shows the demon isn't just, you know, brute strength. It's using cunning.
Right.
Its decision to continue the deception, well, it speaks volumes about the persistent nature of obstacles, both external and perhaps even internal, that the pilgrims face.
And the angle it chooses is a classic of disguise, transforming into an elderly woman, specifically 80 years old.
Yeah, very specific.
The description is so vivid. A bent bamboo cane, slow, feeble movements, a thin, almost transparent appearance.
Mm-hmm.
Even the details of her face withered like old leaves, high cheekbones, downturned lips. Just really painting a picture.
And the extreme age is a deliberate tactic, isn't it?
Seems like it.
It creates this immediate and jarring contrast with the young woman they initially encountered.
Right, the previous disguise.
Exactly. This contrast is precisely what the demon hopes will disarm them. It's playing on their compassion, potentially clouding their judgment.
A classic move.
Yeah. Evil often masks itself in the guise of the vulnerable to exploit empathy, lower defenses.
And it works, doesn't it? At least initially. Ambaji.
Oh, definitely Ambaji. He sees this old woman struggling along and just leaps to a very specific conclusion.
He does, yeah.
Baji's reaction is so typical of him, impulsive, you know?
Yeah.
Based on a very narrow interpretation of events.
Doesn't think it through.
Nope. Doesn't consider alternatives. He sees an old woman, immediately connects her to the young woman Wukong just attacked. It just highlights how easily assumptions can lead us astray, right?
Totally. He dramatically announces to Tang Sunzhang, Master, disaster. Her mother has come looking for revenge for her daughter.
Ah, yes.
And Tang Sunzhang, ever trusting, simply asks, looking for whom?
And that question, it just underscores his inherent reliance on his disciples' perceptions.
Even when they're clearly flawed.
Exactly. Even when they're flawed. His unwavering faith in the goodness of others, while admirable in some ways, often leaves him vulnerable to deception. It kind of raises a question. Is blind faith always a virtue on a journey so fraught with danger?
Good point.
Hmm.
Baji, never one for subtlety, just spells it out. The one senior brother killed. This must be her mother, here for payback.
Sigh. Yes.
But thankfully, someone's applying a bit of logic here.
Finally, this is where Wukong's sharp mind comes into play. He immediately spots the illogical leap in Baji's reasoning, that significant age difference between the supposed mother and daughter.
The 80 versus 18.
Exactly. His skepticism is such a vital counterpoint to the other's more emotional reactions. It reminds us of the importance of critical thinking.
80 versus 18.
Yeah.
Even Wukong, with all his magical experiences, knows that's a stretch. He calls out Baji's foolishness.
He does.
And declares he's going to take a closer look.
And Wukong's ability to see through illusions is, well, it's crucial again and again on their journey.
Absolutely.
He has this discerning eye that often cuts through superficial appearances. It's a skill born from his own experience with transformation and deception, you know?
Makes sense. Mm-hmm. It highlights the value of experience in navigating a world of shifting realities.
Definitely.
And as Wukong approaches, his suspicions are confirmed. It's a perfect facade of old age.
But Wukong's keen senses, honed through, like, years of dealing with supernatural beings, right, allow him to perceive the demonic energy underneath the disguise. What looks frail and harmless on the surface just betrays a darker reality to his experienced eye.
So, no time for pleasantries. Wukong doesn't hesitate. He raises his staff and strikes again.
Wow.
But this demon is nothing if not resourceful.
Absolutely. It repeats its earlier tactic, shedding its physical form like a discarded skin. Poof.
The spirit escapes once more.
Again, leaving behind only the illusion of the old woman. It really highlights the elusive nature of evil, doesn't it? Its ability to evade direct confrontation.
So poor old make-believe grandma gets another wallop.
She does. The false corpse is struck again.
But this time, Tang Sunzhang witnesses the whole thing.
Ah, yes. This is key.
And his reaction is, he literally tumbles off his horse.
Falls right off. Collapses by the roadside and unleashes the Jingo Erzu, the tightening band mantra. That spell that inflicts, you know, severe pain on Wukong when recited.
Oh, not the band.
Yes. And he doesn't just do it once. 20 times. And upside down, for good measure.
20 times. Upside down. You can practically feel Wukong's skull throbbing just hearing about it.
It's brutal. The effect on Wukong is agonizing. The golden band clamps down. His head feels like a squeezed gourd.
Oh.
And he's writhing in agony, just desperately pleading with Tang Sunzhang to stop.
This moment, it starkly illustrates the immense power Tang Sunzhang unknowingly wields over Wukong.
Totally. And Wukong's inherent vulnerability despite his incredible strength.
Yeah. Tang Sunzhang, though, he's utterly convinced Wukong has just murdered two innocent people.
He's seeing red. Or, well, seeing victims.
He's having none of Wukong's pleas. He just unleashes this torrent of accusations, claiming Wukong has ignored his teachings and is simply incorrigibly violent.
Tang Sunzhang's reaction is just, it's so deeply rooted in his Buddhist principles of nonviolence.
Right, compassion above all.
He struggles to reconcile Wukong's actions, even when Wukong insists he was dealing with demons. This fundamental difference in their understanding of the world and how to combat evil, it creates this persistent tension between them. It's always there under the surface.
And then comes the crushing blow. You are a heartless, incorrigible being, intent on evil. Leave.
Wow.
Tang Sunzhang actually orders Wukong to abandon the pilgrimage. Just like that. Wukong, despite the excruciating pain, he makes one last attempt. He actually agrees to leave, but there's a condition. And it involves that accursed golden band.
Right. Wukong's concern about the band, it isn't really about retaining power or anything like that.
No.
I think it speaks more to his sense of honor, maybe. The band is a symbol of that commitment, and its removal would signify a complete break.
Interesting take. Meanwhile, Baji, ever the comedian, or maybe just insensitive.
Probably the latter.
Chimes in with a sarcastic suggestion about dividing their meager belongings, some old clothes, and a straw hat.
Ugh, you can almost hear the collective sigh, right?
Totally.
Baji's remark, it just reveals his own petty jealousies.
Wukong is understandably incensed at the implication that he's squabbling over rags.
As he should be.
He vehemently denies any greed or envy, reminding them of his commitment to the monastic life.
Wukong's passionate denial, it really underscores his wounded pride.
Yeah.
And his genuine dedication, though, often expressed through action rather than words to protecting Tang Sanzang and completing the pilgrimage. He seeks recognition for his efforts, not, you know, old clothes.
And then he launches into this incredible recollection of his former glory as the Monkey King of Flower Fruit Mountain.
Oh, yeah, the big speech.
72 cave demons under his command, 47,000 monsters in his retinue. He even details the outfit.
Right down to the purple gold crown and cloud-stepping boots.
Quite the list.
This detailed recounting of his past power and status, it serves as such a powerful contrast to his current predicament.
Good point. Constrained, misunderstood.
Facing expulsion. It's a poignant reminder of the sacrifice he made to join this arduous journey and the humiliation he feels right now.
He explains that returning to his former kingdom with that golden band still clamped on his head would be utterly humiliating.
Can you imagine? The great sage equal to heaven showing up like that.
Yeah, not a good look. Then comes his crucial request. Recite the song Gu Erzu, the loosening band mantra, the spell to remove the band.
This is the logical solution from Wukong's perspective, right?
It makes total sense.
Removing the band would not only alleviate his physical suffering, but also allow him to leave with some semblance of dignity and without the constant reminder of his subjugation.
And then the bombshell drops.
Oh boy, here comes.
And Aang San Zhang, in a shocking admission, reveals that there is no song Gu Erzu.
No loosening spell.
None. He only knows the tightening one given to him by the Bodhisattva.
That is devastating for Wukong. Just,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
It underscores his complete powerlessness in this situation. He is bound to Tang Sanzang with, like, no means of release. It highlights the totally asymmetrical power dynamic in their relationship.
Even after that stunning admission, Wukong, his spirit, clearly heavy, still offers to continue the journey.
Which is incredible, really. This act of continued loyalty, despite the profound betrayal and injustice he's just experienced, it speaks volumes about Wukong's underlying commitment to the overall mission. And maybe even a sort of reluctant affection for his flawed master.
Perhaps. Tang Sanzang finally showing maybe a flicker of remorse.
Maybe. A tiny flicker.
Agrees to forgive him this time, but with a stern warning against any further violence.
Right. Tang Sanzang's forgiveness feels very conditional, doesn't it?
It does.
And perhaps doesn't fully acknowledge the extent of his own misjudgment. He's still framing the issue as Wukong's propensity for violence.
Rather than his own inability to see the demon.
Exactly. Rather than his own inability to discern good from evil or trust his disciples' sight.
Wukong promises to behave, and so physically and emotionally battered, they reluctantly resume their journey.
And the journey just sort of lurches forward, you know,
yeah.
Forever marked by this painful and incredibly revealing encounter.
After Sun Wukong has already had a couple of goes at this demon, right? He's hit it twice with his staff, but somehow it's still around.
It survived two hits. Wow.
Yeah. And what's fascinating is the demon's reaction. It's not just pure rage. It's almost this grudging respect. It actually says, "Good Monkey King, you truly have eyes."
Huh. So it acknowledges Wukong's power, his perception.
Exactly. It sort of underestimated them initially, but now there's this spark of recognition, which, you know, sets the stage for a more strategic deception next time.
Makes sense. The demon's pride must be smarting a bit, too. It's worried, right? The text says it's worried about the group getting out of its territory like 40 more miles and they're gone.
And the sheer embarrassment if another demon managed to capture them instead.
Oh, yeah. Total loss of face. The original text mentions it would be like laughing at him, breaking his heart.
So the demon thinks, okay, time for round three. This time, an old man. And wow, the description really lays it on thick.
Yeah, tell us about that. False piety, you said.
Totally. White hair like Peng Zhu, you know, the super long-lived guy in folklore.
Yeah.
Beard like the god of longevity. He's even chanting Amitabha,
He's got the whole look down.
Yeah.
Staff, cloak, prayer beads.
The full holy man starter pack. The contrast with its actual demonic nature is just stark.
And the Tang monk buys it completely.
Hook, line, and sinker. He actually comments, quite naively, about how blessed the West must be if even old folks on the road are chanting scriptures.
Oh, master, it shows his, well, his innocence, but also maybe a lack of discernment, seeing the surface, not the reality.
Precisely. But then, enter Pigsy.
Pigsy, always the pragmatist, or maybe just suspicious.
He immediately senses something's off. He warns the monk, this could be the root of disaster.
And Pigsy being Pigsy, he gets pretty dramatic about it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He paints this vivid picture, very focused on himself, naturally, of what might happen if this old man is seeking revenge for his daughter and wife.
What does he predict?
He figures the monk will get killed. Pigsy himself will face exile, or worse. He even has a specific unpleasant fate lined up for Sandy. Classic Pigsy fear-mongering, maybe, but...
But it serves a purpose.
Definitely. It's a total counterpoint to the monk's blind faith. It injects some much-needed skepticism and, frankly, hints at the real danger.
So what's Sun Wukong doing while Pigsy's having his meltdown?
He overhears it all. And initially, he just dismisses Pigsy, you know, typical Pigsy. But then something makes him pause.
Even after the reprimand and the headache curse.
Yeah. Despite that, his instinct to protect his master kicks in. He decides he needs to check this old man out more closely. But this time, he's smarter about it.
How so?
He hides his weapon, his staff, and approaches the disguised demon himself. It shows he's learning, maybe. That brute force isn't always the answer, especially with the monk's restrictions hanging over him.
Right, a more strategic approach he's investigating now.
Exactly. So Wukong, maybe altering his own appearance slightly, goes up to the demon old man and asks some seemingly innocent questions. You know, where are you going? Why are you chanting while walking?
Trying to get the suspect to talk, to reveal inconsistencies.
It's classic interrogation, really. And the demon, thinking Wukong is just some random passerby, the text has a great line, says he mistook the stabilizing needle for an ordinary thing.
Huh. Underestimating Wukong again.
Big mistake.
Huh.
So the demon launches into this sob story, claims he's a respected local elder, super devout, always kind to monks.
Laying it on thick again.
Oh, yeah. Then comes the tragedy. Daughter and son-in-law went to the fields, likely killed by a tiger. Wife went looking and never came back. Now he's searching for their remains to give them a proper burial.
Wow. All designed to evoke pity, solidify the disguise.
Pure manipulation. But Sun Wukong, our resident demon detector, he's not buying any of it.
He sees right through the story.
Cuts right through it. He basically yells, I recognize you as a demon. The text says the demon is so shocked, so terrified, it's speechless.
Boom. Cover blown.
Deception exposed. And it really highlights Wukong's gift, doesn't it? His ability to see the true nature of things, which is often completely at odds with how the monk sees the world based on appearances.
Okay, so the demon's revealed. Now comes the tricky part for Wukong, right? His internal struggle.
This is where it gets really interesting, yeah. He knows this demon is dangerous. He wants to eliminate the threat. But that curse... The fear of the monk chanting is very, very real.
He actually thinks it through, doesn't he? Like, if I don't hit him, he's just playing me for a fool. But if I do hit him, my master will use the spell.
Exactly. It's that constant tightrope walk. Adhering to the monk's compassionate ideals versus the practical need to deal with immediate danger. It's a dilemma. You know, that feeling when your responsibilities clash with the rules or constraints you're under.
You can really feel his conflict. Duty versus discipline.
It's vital for his character. He's torn. Consequences for acting, consequences for not acting. And then, in this flash of, well, pragmatic logic, maybe even a bit ruthless.
Yeah.
He reasons that letting the demon live is actually the bigger risk. What if it snatches the monk later when he's not looking? That would be even more trouble.
So he decides?
He decides hitting it now is the better option. It's better to strike, he concludes, even if it means pain in his master's anger.
That really shows his willingness to make the hard calls, doesn't it? For the greater good, even if it's unpleasant. Very different from the monk.
A stark contrast. So, decision made, he acts decisively. He casts a spell.
A spell? What kind?
He summons the local earth deity and the mountain gods.
Wow, calling in witnesses.
Cosmic witnesses. For this roadside encounter, he basically announces, okay, everyone, look, this demon has messed with my master three times now, toyed with him, I'm ending this.
Out of the 80s.
They recognize his authority, they see the truth of it, they obey and watch from the clouds. It adds this whole layer of, like, cosmic significance.
It shows his actions aren't just random violence, they're aligned with some kind of higher order against evil.
Precisely. And with that divine audience, Sun Wukong delivers the final blow.
One strike with the staff.
One strike. And the demon is truly defeated this time. The text says his spiritual light is extinguished. Gone. No coming back from that.
End of the demon.
Yeah.
Tang Sunzeng, he's just seen what looks like three people killed, right? So he's silent on his horse, probably terrified. And then Baji, he jumps in with that sarcastic comment like, oh, Sun Wukong killed three people before lunch.
Yeah, and it's so calculated. Baji knows exactly how to use Tang Sanzang's fear, his sort of unease about Wukong's way of doing things. Even though Wukong saved them countless times, Baji just plants that seed of doubt.
Exactly. And Wukong, he senses it immediately. He practically begs Tang Sanzang, Master, please don't say the band tightening spell. Mm-hmm. And for anyone listening who needs a reminder, this isn't just a telling off. It's this magical hoop on Wukong's head. The chant causes agony. He knows what's coming.
Precisely. Mm. Then we get that key moment. Wukong actually shows him the pile of bones, points out the inscription on the spine, white bone demon, you know, definitive proof. You'd think, okay, case closed.
You would. And maybe Tang Sanzang hesitates for a second. But then Baji whispers in his ear again, basically saying, Wukong made it all up. Killed some poor travelers and faked the bones just to get out of being punished by the spell.
And this really highlights Tang Sanzang's big struggle, doesn't it?
Hmm.
He wants to be compassionate, spiritual, but he's just so easily swayed, especially when it fits his kind of preconceived ideas about Wukong being too violent. It's ideals versus the messy reality of fighting demons.
And it works. Baji's slander works. Tang Sanzang, full of doubt again, starts chanting the spell. You can just imagine Wukong's pain, kneeling there, begging him to stop, just wanting a chance to speak.
It's properly heartbreaking. The guy who's been their shield, their protector, is punished for doing exactly that, protecting them from a demon.
Mm.
And it's all because of Baji, who everyone knows is, well, often just looking out for himself.
So after this spell, Tang Sanzang starts explaining why he wants Wukong gone. And it's not just this one incident, is it? It's more a general fear. He's worried about what Wukong might do if they reach a city or town. He mentions the Morning Staff, Wukong's weapon, the potential for disaster.
Yeah, if you think about the bigger picture, Tang Sanzang's whole image is built on being this peaceful, benevolent monk. Wukong's raw power, even when it's saving them, it clashes with that image, could cause trouble with regular people.
He even uses that metaphor, you know, good deeds are like grass growing, you don't see it happen, but bad deeds are like a sharpening stone, getting worn down visibly. The idea is that Wukong's violence, even if necessary, has this immediate negative feel. And he stresses, you know, no one saw these killings out here in the wilderness.
Which makes you question Tang Sanzang's priorities, really. Is he more worried about potential social awkwardness down the line than the immediate danger they were just in? And, you know, Wukong's proven loyalty, it says a lot about his judgment in that moment.
Sun Wukong naturally is furious and hurt, deeply hurt. He keeps saying, but it was a demon, it was going to eat you. He's just so frustrated that Tang Sanzang keeps listening to Baji's slanderous words, as he calls them, and that this threat of being sent away keeps coming up.
You can feel the sense of betrayal just reading it. Wukong feels completely let down. And when he says he wouldn't stick around for a third time like this,
yeah,
that it would be shameless, that's him drawing a line. He feels like he has to leave to keep any self-respect.
But he's still worried about them. He asks Tang Sanzang, basically, how are you going to manage without me? Which is a fair question. But Tang Sanzang just gets angry and snaps back, asking if Zhu Baji and Shaseng aren't human, aren't capable, like Wukong's power makes him less something.
Yeah, that's a really dismissive reply from Tang Sanzang. It totally undervalues Wukong's vital role and sort of puffs up the others just because they aren't as powerful or maybe as dangerous in his eyes.
And that really gets to Wukong. The text says he's saddened by that comparison. He starts thinking back, right? All the way from Two Bounds Mountain, all the demons they fought together, recruiting Baji and Shaseng, all that shared history. Suddenly, it means nothing.
You get this powerful feeling of him being, well, devalued, utterly disposable. He uses those metaphors, the bow discarded after the birds are shot, the dog kicked away after the rabbit's caught. It's brutal. He feels used and then just tossed aside.
And even though Tang Sanzang promises, okay, I won't use the spell again, Wukong doesn't buy it. Not really. He points out pretty pragmatically that the next time things get tough, Tang Sanzang will probably just reach for that spell again out of fear.
And he's probably right. Wukong gets Tang Sanzang's impulsive side. He knows the pattern. Fear trumps trust.
Instead of softening Tang Sensing, Wukong's words just make him angrier. He gets off his horse, tells Sha Seng to get ink and paper, and right there by the stream, he writes out a formal letter, a banishment document. This isn't just yelling, it's planned. Final.
That act of actually writing it down, it makes it official, weighty. It's Tang Sensing drawing a final line, severing that master-disciple bond completely, at least in his mind.
And the words he uses? Incredibly harsh. He basically says, "Don't ever let me see you again, or I'll fall into the lowest hell forever."
It's extreme, absolutely uncompromising.
It really shows how convinced Tang Sensing is, doesn't it? Even if we, reading it, think he's wrong, he genuinely believes he's doing the right thing, following his spiritual path, protecting the mission as he sees it.
Wukong takes the letter. He's clearly devastated, but he still tries to be respectful, asks who can make a proper farewell bow. But Tang Sensing just refuses, calls him a villain, and turns his back.
Ouch. That refusal, it's like the final insult for Wukong. After everything, he doesn't even get a dignified goodbye.
But Wukong? Well, he's still Wukong. He finds a way, plucks three hairs, uses his magic to make three copies of himself, and all four Sun Wukongs make that formal bow to Tang Sensing, even though the master won't even look. That is such a powerful image. It says so much about Wukong's character. You know, his respect for the role of master, even when the man himself is rejecting him so cruelly. It's this silent, magic-fueled statement of his loyalty, despite everything.
Before he leaves, he turns to Sha Seng, and you see who he really trusts now. He warns Sha Seng, basically, watch out for Baji, he'll stir up trouble. And he gives him this piece of advice. If the master gets captured by demons, Sha Seng should tell them Sun Wukong is his senior brother. He hopes his own fearsome reputation might still offer some protection.
Which is incredibly selfless, isn't it?
Yeah.
Even after being kicked out, he's still thinking about Tang Sanzang's safety. He knows his name carries weight, and Tang Sanzang's reaction, still refusing to even say Wukong's name, it just hammers home how stubborn he's being.
So finally, Wukong leaves. The text describes him crying as he says goodbye to Sha Seng, then whoosh up on a somersault cloud, covering immense distances in moments, heading back to Flower and Fruit Mountain.
That speed, that power in his departure.
Yeah.
It really emphasizes how definitive this is. He's gone.
But even Wukong can't outrun the emotion. And this wave of loneliness just hits him. And then he hears the tide, the sound of the Eastern Sea, and it reminds him of Tang Sensing, and the tears start again. He actually has to stop for a moment, just overwhelmed with sadness for the master who just cast him out.
It's a beautiful, kind of sad moment.
Yeah.
It really shows that deep down, despite all the arguments, there was a real bond there. A complex one, for sure. Wukong's grief shows the real cost of this split, reveals the heart beneath the Monkey King bravado, and then the chapter ends, leaving you wondering, okay, what happens now?